back to 67.
Chapter 2, text 67. Translation: as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Unless all of the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, even one of them engaged in sense gratification can deviate the devotee from the path of transcendental advancement. As mentioned in the life of Maharaj Ambarish, all of the senses must be engaged in Krishna consciousness, for that is the correct technique for controlling the mind.
The human has all the senses developed, and they're all dangerous, because any one of the senses that wanders off can carry away a man's intelligence. And there's so many examples of this. Even to the point where if someone's driving very fast on the road and his eyes become attracted to some object, maybe some billboard or some person, or even sometimes looking at some nice sunset, you can get an accident. Very easy. Or if he's, same thing, let's say he's driving very fast in the freeway and he wants to hear some nice music, so he's trying to adjust the radio to hear just the right sound. And he's paying so much attention to that sound that he forgets to drive. Another accident. Or the mind is, you see people talking with their cell phones while driving. They're thinking, I have to do this, or the mind is carried away. So all these things are dangerous because he's traveling at a fast speed. Imagine if he's flying a jet airplane. What is the speed? 1,000? Maybe 1,000 miles per hour. Very fast. So all he needs is a little distraction. He's flying, he's got to concentrate. And if he thinks, what was that today? He's thinking something about, what was that thing? A few seconds, finished. Mind goes off. Or the sense of touch. Sense of smell. Why is perfume still selling? Cologne perfume. Why is it still popular? Because it works. It attracts the mind. Another way to. Or even, it's like Vishvamitra Muni was in meditation, yoga meditation, for 60,000 years undisturbed. But he heard the tinkling of the ankle bells of Menaka. Menaka is, she's the one of the four primary dancers in Indra's court in the heavenly planet. Apsaras, they're called. Ramburu, Urvashi, Menaka, and one more, I can't remember her name. But anyway, no, they're transcendental. At least they're in the Bhagavatam. Anything that's in the Bhagavatam we can remember. Even Hiranyakashipu is in the Bhagavatam. So why we mention his name also. Because it's in relationship with Krishna. So, anyway, her ankle bells distracted his mind, and there's so many examples. The senses are compared to snakes, venomous snakes. So if a snake bites anywhere on the body, it doesn't matter where, as soon as it bites, the venomous snake, cobra, finished. You can die from that. So what to do? We have these senses, and what is the most difficult sense to control? Let's all say it together. Sharira vijaja jodendriyata hika jive pele vishaya sagare paramaje jivayati lobamoy sudurmati take jeta kutina samsare krishna moradaya moy koribara jiva joy paprasadana dilobai sayana mritapa radha krishna gunaga. So the tongue is the most voracious of all the senses. This body is made of senses. It's compared to a network of paths leading to death. Very difficult. Just look at the tongue. It's just one big sense. It's just an organ of sense. And every taste bud on there is always, you know, eager. Give me some taste. I want something to taste. You know, why the fast food stores are so popular? Because they're playing on the taste buds. He's driving by, suddenly he's thinking, wait a minute. Pizza. Wait, ice cream. Wait. Burger. This, that. Tongue. Can't control it. Out of control. So the tongue is the most voracious. If one wants to make spiritual advancement, it's not possible unless he first controls the tongue. Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukhi Hi Jivado Svayameva Spuratita. In the beginning, the tongue has to be controlled. Then one can make spiritual advancement. The way to control the tongue, only eat Krishna Prasadam and chant Hare Krishna. If one controls the tongue, then he can control the other senses. Prasadam is so important because it controls our senses, controls the tongue. So, the human being has to become Goswami. He has to learn to control all the senses. Not just a few. It's not that, well, I'm doing good, I don't eat meat. But what about, what are you listening to? What are your ears doing? What are your eyes doing? What is your tongue doing? Or what is your sense of? We have to control all the senses. And how to do that? It's not just going around beating them all the time. Or poking them out. Poke out the eyes. Block up the ears. No. We're living in the material world. These sense objects are there. But one has to voluntarily turn his senses towards Krishna. The eyes, in seeing the form of Krishna. So we see Krishna, beautiful Krishna, and we become attracted. The eyes like to see beautiful things, colorful things, bright. It's like in Las Vegas. Has anyone ever been to Las Vegas? But they have these big casinos and hotels with lights, so many lights, millions of lights. And it attracts the mind. You want to go there. It seems so exciting. Just like the moth. The moth is attracted to the light. Have you seen how the little flies, they go up to the light? Some of them, they go right up to the bulb. And they get right on the bulb. And then you see them, ooh, they go down like that. They get burnt. But they usually don't die right away. So they go back for more. It's some kind of intoxication they're getting. the drug for them. They go up, they get out of the light, down again. And some, when they see the fire, they go close to the flames and they get burnt by the flames. So there's light. They get attracted by their eyes. The fish, the sense of his tongue, he sees that worm and he's thinking, wants to eat it. He doesn't consider maybe there's a hook. He goes for it. Gets caught by his tongue. The ear is a deer. The deer, the hunter plays some music, and the deer becomes captivated by the music. He stops. He can't go away. He likes it. So the tongue, the ear, the eyes, the elephant, the genital, he's so attracted to the female elephant, but sometimes they train the female elephant to run right by a covered pit. She runs by, he runs after, he doesn't know the pit's there, he falls in. They capture him. Very difficult. The animals have one sense that they're vulnerable, but the human is vulnerable for any of the senses. So how to do it? What to do with all these senses? Savaimana Krishna Padara Vinda Vachangsika Vachangsiva Gunana Varnana Vaikuntha Gunana Varnana. Engage the words in speaking about Krishna, tongue in prasadam, eyes seeing the Lord, ears hearing the glories of the Lord, hearing the kirtan, mind in hearing from the scriptures, hearing about Krishna. This is the only way. Unless we engage the senses full time in Krishna's service, then Maya will engage our senses. Watching television, video, computer, will simply be swept off the feet. And then spiritual life is lost. The human life is so short. We only have a very small amount of time left. And we have to be fully Krishna conscious if we want to go to the right place. And if we don't utilize the time in engaging the senses and thinking of Krishna, engaging, then before we know it, time is gone. And we didn't make it. So then we have to take birth again in another material body. Subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego carries the soul to another gross body grouped around the mind. So it's very difficult. We have a lot of work to do in a short period of time. Therefore, one has to be very serious. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Tivrena means very forceful devotional service. Not casual. Casual means casualty. So, if we take it casual, then there'll be a casualty. Maya's waiting to sweep us off our feet at every moment. Therefore, one has to learn to control every one of the senses. That's Goswami. Question? Very difficult to control the senses, and we have this process of surrendering to the disciplic succession. And is there any hope for controlling the senses for someone who wants to take it more casually, maybe not so casually, but doesn't specifically want to follow the best process and the best ways to do things? Is there any hope for someone to be able to control the senses?
Yes, as long as he accepts only regulated sense gratification that's allowed in Krishna consciousness. Sense gratification is like salt. A little salt is required to make the meal tasty. With no salt, it's bland. But too much salt, you ever had a meal with too much salt? That's disgusting. least you can imagine what it would be like with salt. But without, with too much salt, so too much sense gratification ruins the meal. A little bit is all right. So there's Grihastha Ashram. One wants to not take, that's this brahmacharya, stick with it, don't even get involved, just stay away from it. But if one is not able to do that, then there's Grihastha Ashram. That's the next. Yes?
There's a question from New York City. What do you mean by controlling the senses? How? Controlling the senses, how?
Yes, we mean by controlling the senses to engage them in something that's favorable for the soul's progress. How do you control a child? Everyone has had experience. You walk the child along. And when the child starts to go off, what do you do? Or even a dog. How do you control a dog? You don't necessarily have to carry the dog. The dog can walk, but it just has a tendency to sometimes wander off, so you have to keep pulling it back. Come on, come on. And you have the leash. So that's how Krishna says, control the senses. By the mind. The mind is supposed to be controlling the senses. When they go off, the mind will say, hey, come on back. Like when I was in France, yes. I was staying in France recently and out in kind of the country. And just there was a big field and there was thousands of sheep, maybe hundreds, but it seemed like thousands. And there was one dog, one sheepdog, and he was keeping them all going. It was really amazing. Now he was running around. As soon as one sheep would start to go, hey, bark, get back. So we have to be like that, vigilant. Make sure that none of the senses go off. When the mind starts going, hey, come, when the ears kind of go off, hey, come on.
Another question from New York City. In what way or what type of actions would be pleasing to the soul?
To the soul. The soul is spiritual by nature. Therefore, it only takes pleasure in spiritual activities. That's its nature. Just like a fish is a creature of the water. It can only be happy when it's in the water. Similarly, the soul can only be happy when it's engaged in spiritual activities. Spiritual activities means there's three types of spiritual activities. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti. Well, activities in relationship with the impersonal Brahman, activities in relationship with Paramatma, and activities in relationship with Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Those are the spiritual activities that the soul can take pleasure in.
Here's two scenarios of controlling the senses I was going to run by you briefly. One devotee, let's say, for instance, that he would live in a temple for, you know, 4 or 5 years, then he would think, well, you know, toward the marriage ashram and thinking that, well, I'll go drive a semi-truck for, you know, a year or two to save up $30,000 or something. And then, you know, kind of like a detour, and then he'll, but with this money, being kind of having to deal with karmis and driving a truck and maybe not even chaining around some days and not being the most Krishna conscious while he's driving the truck. And being Krishna conscious also like listening to music. But then he wants to, after he's done, he gives it up after a year or two, has $30,000, wants to move to Mayapur, buy a house, get married like that. For that's scenario one. Scenario two, let's say a devotee is thinking like, well, I'm very inclined, a very favorable idea of moving in back in the temple, like he's been living out of the temple for a few years. And he's not married, and he's kind of attracted to some aspects of marriage and not some others. And let's say he's thinking, well, I'll start a business to make some money, and when I'm like 35, I'll have like maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars, and then I can travel around the world and go to different festivals and different Mayapur and buy a house in, you know, Vrindavan and Mayapur. That way he can do like that, versus if he moves in the temple now with little to no money, he's maybe not going to get to go to India every year, and he, you know, because it's such a nectar in Mayapur and Vrindavan, he's going to miss out on that. So But he's attracted to the idea of living in a temple as a brahmacharya. But, you know, so I was wondering about these two scenarios.
So you want to know which one's better?
I just like a word on each one of them. Like
word
if
on
they're
each
both.
One.
If,
well.
Yeah. Like if they're both acceptable, like because someone might say you're admired, you're detailing,
well, we
you're
can,
derailing,
we should,
or.
We should try to do the best we can. But the point is not so much. There's a little bit of a problem because it seems that the emphasis is, to some extent, thinking what I want rather than what the spiritual master wants, what Krishna wants. So that's a better way. He just takes the order of the spiritual master as his life and soul. Then everything's simple. Guru gives him an instruction. This is your proper dhatta desh. He takes that as his life. And then everything else works around that. That's an easier process. Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj told him, why don't you preach in English? That'll be the best thing. So Prabhupada, he started thinking immediately, publishing Back to Godhead magazines in English, everything, trying to preach in English. He was always thinking about it. And then because of that meditation, Krishna facilitated everything. He had wife, he had children, he had grandchildren, he had everything, but because the order of the Guru was number one for him.
Is worship of Paramatma...
Where is this from?
This is from Manchester, UK. Is worship of Paramatma different from worship of Bhagavan? If so, how?
It's different, and it's the same also. It's different in the sense that Paramatma is an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna. It's called Super Soul, the Lord Vishnu in the heart, four-handed feature. And one who practices the Ashtanga Yoga system will be meditating, if he's doing it correctly, he'll meditate upon Paramatma. And he will attain to Vaikuntha, where the Lord is worshipped there with awe and reverence by the devotees. And the residents there, they also get bodies like Vishnu, four-handed bodies. But the relationship is all in reverence. Now, worshiping Krishna can be in awe and reverence, but there's other features of worshiping Krishna that are unique. One can worship Krishna in friendship. One can worship Krishna in parental. And one can worship Krishna as his child. One cannot worship Narayan as child. That's why Devaki, when Devaki saw her new child was Narayan, fully grown Vishnu with full head of hair, and she said, well, she was respectful, but she didn't want that. She wanted a child. So therefore she requested, can you appear like baby, like Krishna? So Krishna appeared as a baby, so she could relate to him in that Vatsalya Rasa. And then there's also, one can relate with Krishna as conjugal lover. It's called Madhuri Rasa. So that's the special relationships with Krishna. Did you have a question? Yes? Question? No.
I guess every soul period, like conditional or non-conditioned, you know, want some type of conjugal or some type of, like, you know, a person to relate to, like Krishna, for instance. So, is a conditioned soul like...
Wait a minute, let me understand. Wants to have a person like Krishna or wants to be like Krishna?
Well, wants to, you know, be in union with Krishna, like, wants to, like, you know, be connected with Krishna and not in Maya, like... I mean, both, I guess. Anyway, I'm just trying to say, like, is a devotee of myself who's, you know, partially in Maya, is it a perverted thing to say that I want to go to... Because I wouldn't mind marrying a woman, but I don't actually want to marry a woman. So if I think sometimes to myself, like, well, I'll just wait to get married when I go to Goloka...
Well,
is
that's
that
good.
To
that's a
like
good
that?
Program.
Something like, you know, forget marrying some flesh bag. I'll
very good
God
program.
Go to heaven, you know?
Better to think about, I'll get married when I get to Goloka. That's a much better program. Isn't it, Babisha?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It'd be a perfect marriage, too. No problems.
Yes. So actually, everyone should think like that. I'll wait till I get married. I'll just wait till I go to Goloka. And then if Krishna wants, I'll get married. Sometimes we read about that. That one gopa marries a gopi. But they're all devotees of Krishna. So they're serving Krishna. Just like here. Maybe some of you don't have so much experience, but I remember when I joined the temple in Los Angeles. It was a wonderful atmosphere of... There were brahmacharis, but there were also grihasthas living right in the same place. And they were so renounced, the grihasthas were just like the brahmacharis. There was no difference really, except they stayed. But they attended all the programs, they were following the same principles. So, they were living together as husband and wife, but really Krishna was the center. Krishna was the object of attraction for both. So therefore, that's very nice. If you can live like that in Goloka.
Another question from Manchester, UK. How can we become enthusiastic in devotional service?
Well, first of all, start off with the things that you already have some enthusiasm for. Okay? If you like prasadam, then start with that. Don't make the difficult things first. Go with the easier things. You like prasadam? So take prasadam. You like chanting? Then chant. You like to read? Then read. And then gradually, as you find more and more things that you become enthusiastic over, then your enthusiasm for other activities will develop. We see this a lot with students. Students generally, they can't generalize, but they want to hear. They're intellectuals, so they want to understand first. And many times they'll say, I don't want to chant until I understand what I'm doing. Okay, so first hear until you understand and then chant. They like prasadam also, even though they don't understand it. So, but anyway, they like prasadam. So students like prasadam. So take prasadam, and if you like to hear, then hear. And then after a while, then maybe you'll get a taste for some chanting and the other things. Start with what you like and then add on.
Question from New York City. I would like some examples of what types of actions, behaviors, or activities that would be pleasing to Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan.
Well, Brahman, the process is the Jnana Yoga system. So the Jnana Yoga system means they also follow Brahmacharya. All the systems require Brahmacharya. So that's one activity that's pleasing to all three. And all the systems require one to control the senses. It's not that the Brahma Jnani, it's not that his senses are uncontrolled. We see the example of Shankaracharya. He's out, when he's speaking, he's pointing out the dangers of sense gratification, the dangers of the objects of the senses, just like the Vaishnava, even though he's preaching Mayavada. So, all three have to control the senses. Yam, niyam, rules and regulations. Now, the specific activity for the Paramatma is Ashtanga Yoga system. Yam, Niyam, then Asana, sitting postures, Pranayama, controlling the breathing. It's very mechanical, but that's pleasing to Krishna because he's on the right path. At least he's moving towards the right goal. It's not the most direct path. It's more direct than the the Maya body or the impersonal path, but it's not as direct as bhakti yoga, devotional service, because that immediately links one with Krishna. Everything is relationship with Krishna. Now what are you doing? I'm going to honor some foodstuffs that have been offered to Krishna. Now what? Now I'm going to bow down to the deity of Krishna. Now what? I'm going to distribute books that are about Krishna. And I'm going to give the results to Krishna. It's Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So, those are some activities that are pleasing to Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna. So, again, the idea is to please Krishna, but indirectly. Another question?
Someone, I guess, was recently saying, she was wondering what the difference was between veganism and vegetarianism, and I was explaining to her that, the veganism is not authorized in the Vedas, and it's like, we need to be vegetarians, not vegans, and she didn't understand. She was reading Jainism and thought we had to, not eat anything from the animal period.
In Krishna consciousness, it's above veganism and it's above vegetarianism. It's transcendental. It's transcendental prasadam. And that means we're eating the remnants of food taken by God, by Krishna. So you don't have to worry about... You don't have to worry about the other aspects, because if it's been accepted by the Supreme Lord, then it's transcendental. Or as they say, if it's good enough for God, it's good enough for us. Now, in our temples, we have a strict standard. We only offer the things that Krishna has specifically requested. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmana. Leaf, flower, fruit, or water, or milk. Because we know, we see by Krishna's life what he ate. What his mother and what the other gopis prepared for him to eat, what he liked. So those are the things we prepare for his pleasure. And then, he eats in such a way, he eats by his hearing or by his seeing, and then the food is still there for us to take. But it's already been accepted. It's like, well, I was in a store today, or yesterday, and I had pulled out a check. I wrote the check. He said, "Yeah, you don't need to fill out all this stuff. We're just going to, they do it automatic. They scan it or something, and they give it back to you. So, you pay, and you get the check back also. So it's like that in prasadam. Krishna, he accepts it, and there it is for you again. It's back to you. They accepted my money, and here's the check back. He took the money and gives the check back. So Krishna takes the bhakti and gives you his transcendental mercy in the form of prasad, and it becomes tastier.
I will ask why we every time forgotten our position. Have we forgotten every time your position that we are the servant of Krishna, that we are these bodies, and
we forgot.
We've forgotten every time.
Yes.
Why
did we forget?
Yes.
Why did we forget?
Yes. No, no. Why we forgot our position, that we are spiritual, that we are not.
Why did we forget our position? Because each living entity is endowed by Krishna with free will to choose whether it wants to serve Krishna or not serve Krishna. Krishna Bahir Mukahana Bhogavan Chakari Nikatasta Mayatari Japatiyatari. As soon as the living entity, he wants to be independent from Krishna, then Maya slaps him down. That's our free will. Why does a child, you've seen little children, so a little child, he has his free will, he has his independence, and the parents don't want to take that away. You don't see a parent put the child in some kind of, you know, rigid straitjacket with, you know, child can't move anything. No. Parents like to see the child move. They just want to give proper protection so the child doesn't hurt himself. But the free will choice is there. Similarly, the living entity, he always has free will. And Krishna doesn't want to take that away from us. But if we misuse it, then he gives us a place that we can go in the material world.
But a child doesn't have fully developed intelligence. The spirit soul has purified, fully developed intelligence and pure devotion. Big difference.
But the living entity may not use his intelligence. That's his free will, to use it or not use it. If he doesn't use it properly, then it gets abused. That's his choice. Free will. Sometimes a young man, he's raised in a very nice family, good parents, everything nice, but he may turn to a life of crime and even try to harm his family, his loving family. That's his free will. Krishna won't take that away, so it's our choice. We have a choice at every second. Do I want Krishna or do I want Maya?
Isn't it also the boy's free will that he's actually in a boy's body at that current point in time where he can actually understand? Maybe he's too young or something, because he was saying like too young, but it's actually his free will that he's even in that body now that he can understand God with, you know, because he's too young or his conscious too undeveloped, you know. Isn't that true?
Say it again quickly.
I'm sorry, I'm talking fast. Akhilyar was saying like the boy is young, and the boy, I think he said something about a boy being too young to understand God, is too young of an age. So I was going to say that you were speaking about his free will in that life, but I was going to say it's even his free will that he's in that boy's body now that he's, you know, can't understand God.
Just like a person who's in prison. Now he's in prison. You could say it's against his will. But no, he had the choice to rob the bank or not to rob the bank. He chose to rob the bank, now he's in prison. He misused his free will, and now he gets the reaction.
Last question, perhaps. The Kali Yuga age lasts 432,000 years long, of which the first five have passed. So, a lot of times we hear in public Christians and people think the world's going to end soon. Like, oh, there's so many natural disasters, so much crime, the world's a terrible place, it must end soon. But we're going to be 400-something thousand years long. So, and we understand slightly from the bottom how it's going to get worse and how it's not worsening, but it just seems with the world, so many natural disasters happening all the time. I think this was only the other day in Japan that killed thousands of people, tsunamis and tornadoes and hurricanes. So it's kind of hard to imagine or envision how it's going to get a lot worse in the next, you know, how
it's
people are
going to
live even 1,000 years from now, let alone 400,000 years from now, you know.
So what's your question?
Well, just it's hard to imagine how it's going to get a lot worse like that, because it's hard to imagine a person even being able to live 500 years from now being so bad today, let alone hundreds of thousands of years from now.
Yeah. The Bhagavatam says that they will have, as the age continues, all the plants will be finished. There'll be no more plant growing. Everything will be polluted. The animals will all be finished. And then they'll just be eating humans. One human eats another human. That'll be the diet. So the age, the trees will get smaller and smaller. The fruits will be skin and pit. That'll be fruit. Which one would you like? no meat in it, no kind of just skin and pit. So better to go back to Godhead before the Kali Yuga gets to that point. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai.